Blog Talk Radio.
May 16th, 9 p.m. Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. Call-in number is 347-884-8500. For those of you on a budget and who isn't, 877-666-9305. Yep, back again. I'm concerned. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones, and right now, as of today, we've reached our debt ceiling, and the Democrats are saying, in this administration, for lack of a more colorful word, well, they'd like to increase the debt limit so that we may spend more money than we have. Now, I'm going to go ahead and assume that most of the people who work for the Senate, who are senators and Democrats, Republicans, it doesn't matter, that they're reasonably intelligent people. I'm going to go ahead and assume that the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, is a reasonably intelligent man. Not God, like people are making him out to be, not Jesus, not Abraham Lincoln, certainly not Ronald Reagan. No, a mere man who puts his trousers on in accordance to his wife's instructions. Or perhaps that of a teleprompter. So then, assuming that these folks are all reasonably intelligent people, why then would they seek to increase our debt? Why? Because if you do the math, and I've done the math, and so have a lot of other people, taxing every single American, every dime, 100%, would not even put a dent in our national debt. And as of today, we've heard that Tim Geithner has taken to raiding pension plans. Uncle Sam is about to start borrowing from his nieces and nephews to stave off the immediate threat of default. And this, according to Fox News. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner has informed members of the Congress that with the U.S. government reaching its $14.3 trillion debt ceiling today, his department will have to turn to a string of last resort measures so that the government can keep paying its bills. At the top of that list is a plan to suspend investments to two government employee retirement funds while borrowing from one of them. Geithner stressed that the move will not affect federal workers and retirees, and that the accounts will be made whole once the debt limit is increased. Okay, here's the issue. if you or I managed our budgets the way these clowns are managing the federal government's budgets, we'd be in bankruptcy right now. You know, there are companies that look at your credit rating, your credit records when hiring. And if the federal government were being hired by a private company and their credit report was scanned by the hiring authority, I can't assume that the federal government, if it were an individual, would even get a job. Is there anybody to blame here? Because, you know, this is Obama's show right now. This is his show. You know, he has taken to toning down this blame of the mess he inherited from George Bush at every claim. It's his job now. Well, what's going on? Does anybody in the government find this whole thing to be just the least bit embarrassing? We're going to go ahead and take our first call. Calling, you're on the line with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. Hello. Seems like we have a bad connection here. I hope the caller calls back. That sounded like a lot of gibberish. Could be Skype, it could be Blog Talk, could be me. I doubt it. Cool Mike is in the room. Karen Hunter's in the room. I'm in the room. All right. So here we have. Sometimes I don't even know what to say. I mean, I look at this situation and I have to wonder. Iran's president says they want a new world order. I mean, he said that on many occasions. And many believe that Barack Obama is a new world order failure. And he's a puppet. Then don't forget Miss Wendy Seven, of course not. And don't forget TM. We'll just go with TM. That's a lot to say there. Vander Kirkhoff. Bush wanted a new world order. That's right, cool Mike. He did want a new world order, but it was a new world order where there was some order restored to the world, not a new world order where there's a world domination and it's being dominated by a conglomerate of heads of state who control the world's economy, you know, like the Bilderbergers and all those folks, Trilateral Commission, that kind of thing. He wasn't speaking in that way. When Bush stated that, Bush number one stated he wanted a new world order, he meant where that whole utopian thing where there wouldn't be any wars and we'd all get along, you know, that kind of thing. And it was his hope for that kind of world order. Not something as sinister as what many believe Barack Obama is proposing here. Once again, I must let you know that this is a political message here. It is. It's a political message. It's my point of view. I am a conservative. I'm a Republican. But more importantly, I am an American. And I believe in America. I love the United States of America. It's not about me. It's about us as Americans. It's about our country. Because I see us going the way of Rome and even to a certain extent Great Britain, where they were once the greatest dominant superpowers. And because of their greed and excess, their empires collapsed, and I see that happening to the United States of America. I'm bringing some right now is some of Barack Obama's failures to light. And the reason why I'm doing that is because the majority of this nation's citizens do not have a clue as to what bad shape the country is in. Barack Obama has laid the groundwork for the coming collapse of America. And I honestly believe that. You know, I'm starting to believe that America will collapse into a complete economy breakdown, or even a civil war that will divide the country up into separate countries. And it's not so far-fetched. A very respected, a noted and respected Russian economist believes the same thing. He stated as much just a few years ago and reiterated his belief. And I'll go ahead and play the clip and you can listen to it.
Professor Igor Panarin, who's the author of the book, The Crash of America, says President Obama will lead his country to a breakup, just like Mikhail Gorbachev did.
Obama is the president of hope, but in a year, there won't be any hope. He's practically another Gorbachev. He likes to talk, but hasn't really managed to do anything. Gorbachev had at least been a secretary of a regional Communist Party administration, whereas Obama was just a social worker. His mentality is totally different. He's a nice person and talks nicely, but he's not a leader and will take America to a crash. When Americans understand that, it will be like a bomb explosion.
Now, he hit the nail right on the head, did he not? Because right now, there isn't any hope. Oh yeah, there was a lot of hope. There was hope for hope and change. But right now, there is no hope. And didn't he have it right? Oh, Obama speaks nice. He's got a nice smile. He wears a nice suit. But hey, I watch White Collar. Don't you? A White Collar, the guy's real handsome. It's about a con man who is... He works for the FBI. Yeah, we'll get to that later. Wears a nice suit, has a nice smile, can talk you out of your watch and your wallet, maybe even your girlfriend. Well, that's Barack Obama, nothing but a well-dressed, well-educated con artist. And indeed, he is conning the whole of the United States and in some cases even the world. Now, if you think that America breaking up and collapsing, if you think that the idea of a civil war, another civil war, is far-fetched, you think it's crazy talk? States like Texas have already been hinting at the possibility of seceding. Arizona. They are going against the federal government every chance they get. And their arguments are that we should protect the border and that the government should stay out of states' businesses where states' rights are called for, and that the federal government is pretty much taking over and subverting the Constitution. Now, is that not a breeding ground for a state to suggest that the government and this administration has overstepped its authority, its constitutional authority, and that perhaps secession would be in order? Is that so far-fetched? The call-in number is 347-884-8500. The toll-free number is 877-666-9305. I've got some more of this clip from this noted Soviet historian, scholar, and economist. Listen.
Igor Nikolaevich, in one of your previous lectures, you've mentioned that the United States could be actually disintegrating in the near future. You made such theories about 10 years ago when the United States was a flourishing state. What are you basing your theories on?
In the light of today's crisis in the U.S., many people started talking about possible major changes in the country. But I expressed my concept back in September 1998 in Linz, Austria, at the Information War Conference. On the 9th of September, I produced a report with a very unusual ending. I kept the ending of my report secret from the other participants of the conference. A huge map of the United States appeared on a 40-meter screen. I pushed a button on my computer, and this map fell into 6 pieces. 400 people in the audience cried out in shock. Before the map fell apart, it had the disintegration of the USA in 2010 written on it. My statement got a huge response, but even to my surprise, many Americans and Europeans took my ideas very seriously. At the time, I emphasized the 3 main reasons which, in my opinion, could lead to the collapse of the U.S. The first one is the moral and psychological factor and the stress of the American population. The second one is the financial and economic problems. And the third one is the increase of anti-Americanism in the world.
Well, let's imagine the United States really started
okay, hold on.
Around.
How hold on,
will this disintegration happen?
Anti-Americanism in the world. Barack Hussein Obama came into office touting hope and change and a new America, and he went around the globe kissing butt, bowing, scraping, begging, pleading, butt-kissing galore. And America is just as hated as it was under the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, and the Reagan administration. It's just as despised around the globe. And indeed, in the Bush administration, we didn't see countries breaking up, mass riots, governments being overthrown left and right. We didn't see all of that. For whatever you think of George Bush, the previous president, before Barack Obama, there was a sense of order in the world. Yes, we were involved in two wars. But there was a sense of stability, was there not? Am I deluded? Did we have wars and rumors of wars under the Bush administration? Yes, too. But was the world in total chaos? I mean, on the scale that we see on Fox News, Fair and Balanced, tonight. No, it was not. But liberals assumed that Barack Obama was going to come into office and then we'd all be holding hands, singing Kumbaya. And that's not happening. The world is in chaos. And this noted political scientist, economist, author, Soviet author, I won't pronounce his name because I don't want to mess it up. He has predicted that the United States of America will eventually break up into 6 pieces. That we will suffer a devastating new civil war. And that America will be broken up based on the reasons that he gave in that previous clip. And he gave this scenario months ago, years ago. Years ago, and then reiterated it just a few months ago. And don't you see it happening? Is it not happening right now? Everything that this guy is talking about is actually happening. Is it not scary? And yet, there are those who say that Barack Obama is doing a swell job. He's doing a great job. Oh, my God, he's the greatest president in the world. He's Jesus. He's Jesus. Now, I believe that America will collapse into a complete economic breakdown. I believe that the country will be divided up into separate countries. I do not know the New World Order's complete agenda. But one thing is for certain, that America is in the crosshairs and Barack Obama is the flunky, yes, who's going to go ahead and see it through. I believe that. I'll tell you what. Let's go ahead and finish this clip, and then we'll take some calls. And barring any calls, I'll finish up the rest of this monologue. Because you got to hear it. You've got to hear it. The time for rose-colored glasses is over. The time where we believe that the United States is going to pull out of this mess, even if Barack Obama is reelected and finishes out a second term, there are those Republicans, conservatives, that say that, hey, America won't, the damage is not irreparable, that we can fix this. I'm not so sure anymore.
How many parts will the United States be divided then?
At that time, I expressed my concept, it would fall into six parts, and I backed it up with several factors. First of all, there were the ethnic, economic, and geographical factors. So we see a totally different ethnic group and ethnic interests. Texas and the Gulf of Mexico coast are the fuel and energy complex, the oil sector. California is Silicon Valley and high tech. Considering New York, Washington, and the Atlantic coast, they're all financial centers first of all. And the northern states of the U.S. are basically the depressive states, which are close to Canada in their mentality and economic development. This is how I divide these parts. The danger is this would not be a very beneficial solution for Russia.
Well, as soon as you've mentioned it, how this potential disintegration of the United States can affect the world, and in particular, what will it mean for Russia?
The Russian economy and Russian industry is very much dependent now on the situation in the United States. Of course, if this crisis keeps developing, Russia is going to face quite a hard time in the next 6 months. In this sense, Russia, in my opinion, should do its utmost to minimize the influence of the American crisis on its internal structure and of the social and political stability and economic stability. For the approaching meeting of the 20 most economically developed states in the world in London, Russia suggests...
Okay. So America will find itself broken up into six separate states or countries. And once again, those being the most prosperous states will be that of the North, and the South will suffer. And the really sad part of this story is that it's all happening right now. It's all happening right now. I mean, it's not what we have here is not a Nostradamus situation where there is a prediction that is so far off into the future, or a set of circumstances where it's only partially playing out, and then you have a pundit claiming that, hey, this is all happening. No, everything that the Soviet political scientist said would happen is happening just short of the civil war or breakup of the states. Look at what Texas is doing. New Jersey, Virginia, there are 28 states so far fighting the federal government over Obamacare, saying that it is unconstitutional. 28 states. Suppose those 28 states decide that they're going to secede. That they're going to secede from the United States of America and cease to recognize the United States government under President Barack Obama. Is that so far-fetched? Could it happen? Is it possible that we can see, or that we will live to see a second civil war? And wouldn't it be ironic that the civil war was caused by a president who came into office advertising hope and change and a new way of doing business in Washington, and transparency, and all of that crap? Wouldn't it be ironic that the president who rode into town, like Lincoln, wouldn't it be ironic that the president of the United States of America right now, who has compared himself to Lincoln, wound up presiding over a government that is split apart? Think of it this way. The president of the United States of America is dividing America based on economic and party lines. Class warfare abounds. He is the author of it all. He doesn't speak to bringing Republicans and Democrats together for a common cause. He doesn't speak to the idea of bringing Democrats and Republicans together. He doesn't tone down the rhetoric. He asks that the rhetoric be toned down, but he ratchets it up the very next day. He is completely partisan. It seems to me that this savior of America, indeed the savior of the whole world, according to some, is the destroyer. Now, I've done shows dealing with Armageddon, the end times, the Antichrist, and all that, but doesn't it seem like this is all happening all day long, every day? We have a caller. Caller, you're on the line with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report.
Well, good evening. This is Cool Mike.
Mike.
How are you doing, Doc?
Hey, I'm good. How are you? Missed you this weekend. Haven't seen you online.
Doing well. Working my life away. I was online for Tesla's show. Okay. Doc, if I'm not mistaken, by Constitution, if two-thirds of the states ratify, the states are actually stronger controlled than the federal government, if I'm not mistaken. For example, Newt was saying, and I have to take his word, he is very constitutionally scholared. He had commented if two-thirds of the states want to abolish the income tax for the federal level, they can, and other things. Loki has also stated, who's constitutional, that like all these departments, are Department of Energy, et cetera, are illegal because they have not been ratified by the colonies, which are two-thirds the majority. So I would assume somebody needs to inform the states that they could probably thwart Obamacare or do something. I don't know, but
well,
I mean,
you bring
up a really scary point. But
well,
it's an accurate point.
Yeah,
because half of the states don't go for this. Half of the states do. I don't know. The outcome could be very scary.
It could be, and indeed, the problems here are complex and yet simple at the same time. The economy is going bad. Every way possible, the economy is going bad. And Obamacare is being put into play, and it's going to cost money initially, and money we don't have. And just over the course of last week, the administration has issued another 200 waivers. Are we up to nearly 3,000 waivers so far? I think it's closer to 2,500, to be fair. It's 2,500 waivers from this monstrosity of legislation. So far, just 200 within the last week. And yet Obama seeks to force this disgrace, I can't even think of the appropriate words for it, on the majority of Americans. And Americans are saying no. I mean, it's all real nice and sweet when you think about it. I mean, who doesn't want world peace? Yeah, we all do, but is it ever going to happen? No. As long as there are men, and I use men and women in the same, but when I say men, so be politically correct. As long as there are men on this planet, there's always going to be somebody who wants what somebody else has and willing to take it or die to take it. That's the way it is. And you can't eliminate that from the human condition. So there's always going to be wars. There's always going to be fighting. It's never going to go away, and there's no such thing as world peace. Get over it. And just as that is the case, America's never going to be a utopia. It's just not how we roll. And so it's real nice to talk about, free health care for everybody and universal health care, and we have the right to health care and all that. Do you have the right to force a doctor to give you health care for free? No, you don't. And from what I'm reading, we're going to have a shortage of doctors. So, I mean, all this pie in the sky stuff, it's real nice and sweet, but it's just not working out. And this guy is going to continue to hammer and hammer and hammer and force us to do things we don't want to do. And guess what? Americans will not be forced to do what we don't want to do. We are hardwired individually and collectively for freedom. The freedom to do what we want, when we want, how we want, within the confines of the law. And he is attempting to force us to either submit or pay dearly for not submitting. And it just doesn't work that way. Your thoughts, Mike?
Well, if we think healthcare is expensive now, wait till it's free. Really see how much it costs us. What's a utopia? Yeah, I don't know what that word means.
That means, a utopia is the place where everybody's happy.
Oh, okay.
And there's the Garden of Eden was a utopia where the birds were singing and the butterflies were flying and there was food and everybody lived to be 900 years old like Methuselah, and it was all just real nice and sweet. And nobody had a care in the world. And like Al Sharpton said, he hoped America would be, everything was equal in everybody's house. Everybody has a Cadillac or Mercedes-Benz, if you wish. Everybody has a house, a nice, decent house. Everybody, kind of like Marxist and communist believe the world should be like, where everybody gets something for nothing. Yeah, the perfect world.
Yeah, well, even back in the Jesus times, I mean, there were people who lived in the big stone houses and had the luxuries, and those didn't. So, I mean, yeah, it's almost like people who believe in a world without violence. That's a great thought, but very unrealistic for as long as man is going to be like we are. But I have to agree. I think I am unsure why more governors are not standing up to this. One of the problems, I think, is that the federal government has basically become – they have made the states also very dependent on the federal government financially. So in many ways, they're almost the puppets of the federal government, because clearly in education, the federal government is setting mandates and guidelines to the states. And here in Obamacare, basically, if you're not one of the exceptions – and this is kind of weird. You had mentioned 200. I mean, is it for everyone or is it not for everyone? Well, where the president is constantly saying You know, people should be able to get sick and it shouldn't kill their savings. They should have health care. Okay, what's happening to these companies of that 200 that they begin to slash their health care plans? What happens if you don't belong to the government plan? And then they have like a 50% copay. You could end up losing it all.
Well, no doubt, Mike. You know, the thing here is that we have 28 states so far who are fighting against Obamacare. What I wonder is what would happen if the Supreme Court upheld the right of the federal government to force us to pay for a good or service. What's going to happen if that turns out to be the case? And then opens the, because what I believe will happen is that it'll open the floodgates for America, for the government to determine that we should now no longer drive cars with combustible engines, that we should, that it's being demanded by executive order that we, that every citizen purchase an electric vehicle in order to save the planet. And that if you don't purchase an electric vehicle and you maintain your combustible engine vehicle, you will be fined for doing so. Because there's precedents been set, if Obamacare is upheld by the Supreme Court, that the government can, quote, tax you, end quote, for not doing what it says that you, that they want you to do. And that tax could be in the form of a monetary or perhaps even your freedom. So this is all very, very serious. And there's a reason why one member of the Supreme Court who has wanted to retire for the last 4 years and is on death's door with one toe crossing the line has stated that he will not retire until Obama is out of office. And that's from an anonymous source, by the way.
I was thinking you were talking about John Paul Stevens.
Yes, I am. Yes. Go on, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to word this so it makes sense. The bottom line is that when, you know something, Hitler campaigned for change. I mean, when people hear that word change, in many ways, technology changes, the automobile business changes. Even when the automobile industry has fought change, at a certain, just like in technology, you don't have a choice when the people themselves are changing. I think it's a lot of what happened. I strongly believe in Egypt that a lot of this was just a younger generation, and what was taking place last summer in Iran before they got ran over by the tanks and gas and shot to death. But I mean, in many ways, even with healthcare, it's going to evolve. And I mean, the worst thing in the world, and I agree healthcare was out of control, and but so were gas prices. But eventually, the market does catch up and it drops again. When government interferes most of the time, that's when it really gets screwed up, I believe, Dr. Jones. I believe it's good to give incentives. Hey, this is what we can offer you if you start developing these type of things. That is what a democracy can run, where you're incentive a business to expand their departments. And eventually certain type of cars will kind of disappear because the times will disappear. But, I mean, when the government gets involved in anything, such as health care, this is the mess you have. And you know something, Doc, what you said is about Civil War, with all the problems that are all the problems taking place, to throw this in also, you're talking about broke people that can't afford anything that are now going to be told they have to pay for health care. It's almost like taking away cigarettes from a nicotine addict. You never know when they'll go postal.
Well, there's no doubt, and you know it's happening. And I spoke to this in shows a few months ago, where what's happening to us, what's happening to us as citizens of this once great country, is that we're being it's like putting I use the frog in the pot analogy, where if you toss the frog, or maybe even the toad, into the pot of hot water, he's gonna flap around and hop out if he can. But if you put the toad in the water and you turn the heat up real slow, next thing you know, you got a toad that's belly up in your hot water. And I know that this is what's occurring with this country. Little by little, we're being pushed into a situation where we are being controlled by the United States government. Look at the situation a school district in California, where students' lunch meals are being monitored with a camera. Their lunch meals are being recorded, so that what they are now eating for lunch is being recorded and monitored. And even though right now the parents have to sign off on something like that, what's to say that the student still isn't being recorded? Little things like that, and people say, well, that's kind of nitpicky. I mean, that's just a little thing. Yeah, maybe it's a good thing. Yeah, but when you start down that road where little things like your child's meals are being monitored by a school system, that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's just the beginning. It's not the government's job to monitor my child's food intake and what they eat, whether it's a damn Twinkie or a slice of pizza or some fries. That's my job. But more and more, local, state, federal governments are beginning to nanny state us and push us into a point where they're telling us what's good for us.
Yeah, in the city of San Francisco, Doc, pop machines, soda pop, those vending machines have been banned. They can still have the machines, but they have restricted the products to, like, milk and other type of soda products. I don't know about Gatorade and stuff, but I know, like, it's Coke and Pepsi, Mountain Dew, RC Cola, 7-Up Squirt. Like, those type are not allowed in the city vending machines.
Yeah.
Also, exactly. Yesterday, as of Sunday, the very last American auto dealership in the city of San Francisco closed. Within the city of San Francisco, that big city, there are zero American automakers in the city.
And you know
zero
what?
Zero dealerships.
That is extremely unfortunate. I tend to believe that we are headed for a situation where this government is going to drive us, this president is going to drive a wedge into this country, such to the extent that there is going to be a massive rebellion. We already have right-wing militia groups out in the woods right now, practicing. We always have, you know, to me, they're a bunch of loons. Yeah, I give them a little bit of credit for loving their country and God and apple pie and mom and all that, but that's where it stops. Those lunatics are out there getting ready for battle, and this government, this administration is feeding these people, and they'll probably be the first to start off this big fight between the government and the people. So I believe they'll kick it off real nice, but it's just the beginning. This administration has severely misjudged the mood of this once great country. Obama has a few zealots out there. He has a mass of followers out there. He has the Democrat faithful out there. But that's all he has right now. And pretty soon, it's all going to come to a head. And it's a scary thought.
Well, it is a scary thought, but, Doc, it's even more scary when you have an awful lot of Republicans that are so similar to the Democrats. It's almost like two sides of the same coin. And the only difference between them is one has a D at the end of their name and the other is an R. Republicans have to get back to fiscal conservatism financially, which means no deficits. You spend no more than you take in. You borrow no more than you can make payment on. And you try to you try to pay off your debt as soon as you can to help make the dollar stronger as well as your corporate country's economy. But sadly, we don't. I mean, even this the budget shutdown. I mean, the Republicans' budget was a joke too. And we need really just new, fresh blood, kind of in many, many ways. When Ronald Reagan was elected in the 80s, he got in. I think it was in 84, he got a lot of fresh faces. And
you know what?
The same thing kind of happened to Clinton like 10 years later. And
I agree. I agree, Mike. But the thing here, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. The thing here is we don't really have time right now to develop a new form of Republican or to start a new conservative movement. There isn't time. Maybe after Obama, but you know, I think it'll be too late by then.
Well, Doc, if we elect the president who is that leader, the politicians will change. Whatever the president tells, for the most part, the politicians change with what the president tells them. You know, Sam Nunn isn't around to fight with the president. He would have fought. He would have fought Bill Clinton and as well as Barack Obama. But the Democrats are robots. But in the GOP, they don't hesitate to be combative. But if we got a good fiscal conservative president, the GOP would follow suit. So we wouldn't need really to clean house. Basically, they would all just follow suit.
Well, but that brings us back to that brings us back to a topic from a previous show. Who is that president? We need a Ronald Reagan. We don't have one. Now, Donald Trump stepped out. So we don't have to worry about him. But who really thought he was going to run anyway? All the publicity, all the attention he was getting, that's what he was doing. And you talked about it on your show with GDT. And I talked about it on my show. Tesla talked about it. Everybody talked about it, that this guy was just getting his glory. And we all dug it. But Newt shot himself in the foot, you know, the other day. He's pretty
much
done.
What did he say? I've heard everyone has said but I don't know what he said. I didn't see the interview.
Newt came out and blasted Paul Ryan's budget plan, pretty much endorsed Obama's health care plan, his proposals, endorsed them, stated that the Democrats had some good ideas, that Obama had some good ideas, and that Paul Ryan's budget plans were extreme and showed a Republican extremism, and he used words like that, those buzzwords that'll pretty much kill your presidential aspirations. Well, he used them all. If there's anybody in the chat room who knows exactly what he said, come on online and talk about it at 347-884-8500. I don't have the exact words in front of me. I'm giving you bits and pieces, Mike, of what I remember. But he, Charles Krauthammer today at 6 p.m. on Fox Report stated that Newt is done. And Newt wasn't going to win anyway. But he's done. He might as well just not even run now. He can't recover.
I remember Pat Buchanan making the comment to Bob Dole. When Bob Dole called Pat Buchanan an extremist, he said those are the cuss words of the Republican Party. So
mm-hmm.
Obviously, when you make those statements, because I think with Republicans they have always been some very conservative, and some people think, well, wait a minute, they're too conservative. Like some would say Ron Paul or just those people in general. But I always like Newt's speaking ability. But sadly, just just my thinking. I'm someone who respects our elders. I respect the people who have done an awful lot for this country, who have sacrificed for our generation. But Newt is not just yesterday. Newt is way, way, way yesterday. And the last thing we need, I think we just need somebody who is not afraid to call Obama out on his failures, who is not worried about the race card getting thrown in his face, and who can actually really show the country a map to in which we will change and not only go in the direction we need to prosper, but a route that we need to do in order to get our dollar back in line, which continues to be our, really our, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's a big reason why day in and day out our economy is just not resurging.
No doubt, Mike. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. If you'd like to hang on, Mike, I'd love to have you, but
yeah.
I'm going to take a short break. We'll be right back. All right.
Just down the hall, at another House hearing, the top executives of the nation's five largest oil companies face day two of questioning after their appearance in front of some senators yesterday. The Dog and Pony Show continued with executives laying some of the blame for the high prices on the federal government and not allowing oil exploration in certain places like offshore waters or in a wildlife refuge in Alaska. James Rosen following this again for us tonight. Those executives had to sit there today while lawmakers called their salaries, quote, obscene. Got a bit heated, huh?
Yeah, it did indeed, Chef, and never more so than when the California Democrat Maxine Waters challenged the president of Shell Oil, John Hofmeister, to guarantee the American people the prices they pay at the pump will go down if the oil companies are allowed to drill wherever they want off of U.S. shores.
I can guarantee to the American people, because of the inaction of the United States Congress, ever increasing prices unless the demand comes down, and the $5 will look like a very low price in the years to come if we are prohibited from finding new reserves, new opportunities to increase supplies.
And guess what this liberal would be all about? This liberal will be all about socializing, would be about basically taking over and the government running all of your companies.
The word, obviously, that Maxine Waters was looking for there, Chef, was nationalizing the oil industry.
Wow, how did Shell Oil answer that one?
Basically by saying, we've seen this movie before. It's called Hugo Chavez and Venezuela.
Heartbreaker, grandma needs a new pacemaker, and the doctor says, I realize she's ill. But there's talk of legislation on all our medication, and maybe all we can do is put her on a pain pill. Oh, Marie. Hey, Congress, you vote Obamacare. We'll vote you out of there. We the people have awakened to your tricks. You vote to let this pass. You'll be out on your own. Cause we the people have awakened. And to put it in words you might understand, if you had the common sense that God gave a billy goat, you'd no doubt notice that your constituents, the electorate, that's us voters, are onto your pork barrel special interest tax and spend scam. Or to put it more succinctly, we've heard from Hannity, Beck, and Limbaugh what you got in mind for grandma. We found this O'Reilly fella on Fox. We're kind of like Joe the plumber, and when we crunch the numbers, it all adds up to voting you out at the ballot box. You vote Obamacare, we're gonna vote you out of there. We the people have awakened to your tricks. You vote to let this pass. You're gonna be out on your knees. Cause we the people have awakened. And to put it mildly, we're harboring feelings of extreme alienation due to copious amounts of horse manure that have been shoveled out of the White House and the Capitol building, and we sense that we are being royally defecated upon. Yeah, we're getting the impression that you think we are not relevant to these proceedings and dismissing our input into the situation.
And please tell Nancy Pelosi we're gonna do the hokey-pokey. Put the right ones in, pull the left ones out. You vote Obamacare, we're gonna vote you out.
Well, that was Ray Stevens. And, yeah, he's the man who brought us the streak. Some of you, like perhaps Cool Mike, weren't born when he did the streak song back in the early 70s. But I was here. I dug it. All right, we've got Cool Mike coming back. Mike, you heard Maxine Waters. If the oil companies don't, if she demands that the oil companies guarantee that they'll bring those prices down, or she's going to make a move to nationalize or socialize or take over all of these companies.
Doc, as much as I'm opposed to the gas prices jumping, I don't know how to respond. I don't believe she said that. I mean, I do. That is the first. Finally, they came out and said it. Let's face it. Maxine Waters, Jackson, Obama. I don't know about Dennis DeConcinis, but Pelosi, Reid. This is exactly. They finally said it. They're not hiding it.
Yeah. And you know what? Rush Limbaugh said that there was going to come a time in this with this administration where they're going to say it. They're just going to be so mad that they're just going to say it, and you're going to hear it, and it's all going to be out there. And this was one of those times. Rush Limbaugh said this a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, when Barack Obama first took office, right after his first 100 days, Rush Limbaugh said that one day Obama or Nancy Pelosi or some Democrat in the Congress and Senate is just going to come out and blurt it out. And that's exactly what happened. Hold on, Mike. We got another caller on the line. I'm going to bring him on. Caller, you're on the line with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. Yep. Hello. All right, that caller must be having some technical difficulties, and so we'll get right back to him. All right, yeah, Mike, they've come right out and they've said it.
I think, Doc, I don't think these callers are having phone troubles. I think you have a saboteur. I think there's somebody trying to knock you off the market. I think you're becoming a little too popular for the 9 o'clock hour.
It's a conspiracy.
Well,
caller,
no,
you're
not,
on the line.
One call is a conspiracy, Doc. You got to trust me on this one. Here's a utopia, if you will. If you go to Maxine Waters' district, I'll bet you they'll fight us tooth and nail defending what she just said.
Yes,
that's what we need to do. Yeah, why are we dependent on gasoline? I mean, why are we? We are just such a nation, so one tunnel visioned. We should have all kinds of different alternatives. And granted, well, government should have done this. No. We should have done this.
Yeah.
Blame every single problem is Dr. Jones's fault or Cool Mike's fault or the government's fault. No, it's our fault.
No
because
doubt.
We have those liberties to make the changes.
There's no doubt about that. And here's the situation with these oil companies. A study was done actually by an independent think tank, an independent auditor, where it's been revealed now that the oil companies make a whopping, astronomical 9 cents per gallon profit. 9 cents. Now, it's also been revealed that the government, the state, local, the federal government, and the local governments take in taxes nearly 30 cents in taxes from the gas prices. So perhaps if the United States government would sort of bring down their taxes just a little bit, and maybe if the oil company gave a cent or two, things would be pretty good. But I tell you what, it's not the fault entirely of the oil industry. With the United States government taking taxes, the local governments taking their big bite, both individually are taking more in taxes than the oil companies are making in profit. So really, who is the victim here? Who is the who is exploiting us? It seems to me more like the government is the greedy one here.
Well, that's a slippery slope. The oil companies obviously are making incredible $1 billion in profit. That's the business and that's the nature. Government is just an inefficient run business, and we're the people who support who fund it. Bottom line is, I don't know how much gas is really going up other than the dollar is dropping. So the price is going up to basically make up for that. I'm not a numbers scholar. I don't know. But the bottom line is, I do know this, nationalization is the last. Oh, my God. I mean, they finally said it. I don't know why I'm in such shock. I guess it's because it's the first time they actually said it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, oh, my God. I mean, look at what can we point to that government does effective, efficiently, you know, it's cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, really good at?
Only one thing, and that's the United States military. And they're not run by the government, per se, as they are young privates, corporals, and second lieutenants who rise to the rank after 20, 30 years to become generals. The government doesn't run anything efficiently. If you're a proponent of this utopian-style free healthcare system, I challenge anybody who's listening to the sound of my voice right now to go take a moment on your way home from shopping, or if you're anywhere near a VA hospital in your area, park your car in the VA hospital parking lot and take a walk around inside and just stand there for a few minutes and watch what happens. Observe, if you will, what occurs in a VA hospital, which is run by the government and is free for all servicemen. Right now, if I had a cold, I could walk into a VA hospital and be serviced after about 6 hours wait time. Okay? I could walk in, and if my finger was hanging off, I wouldn't have to wait more than 2 or 3 hours for somebody to come and put a bandage on it and then tell me, you know, wait another 3 or 4 hours. I wouldn't have to wait that long, you know. If I was suffering from a heart attack and I went into a VA hospital, well, 3-4 hours wait time, it would be nothing, nothing at all. Go into your local post office, where their paychecks are pretty much guaranteed. And if the person wasn't a nice person to begin with, you know, then you're out of luck, because you're going to get the kind of service where they think that you're interrupting their day and that you're some sort of a nuisance, and why are you here? And they don't have to be nice to you. They don't have to provide good service. Why? Because they're going to be paid regardless. There's nobody to complain to. And even if you did complain, it wouldn't make a bit of difference. This is what the government runs. so many years ago, even with my greatest president, Ronald Wilson Reagan, and I say his name and a tear comes to my eyes, Mike. I get a lump in my throat just saying his name. Even when he was president, there were situations where toilet seats were $750. A hammer was $450. And I was a young Marine. There was a big government scandal because private companies were charging the government and the military astronomical sums, hundreds times more than I would pay for it if I went to the store that time and just got it from the hardware store. Because back when I was young, there was like hardware stores, not Home Depot, you know. But I tell you what, the government doesn't do anything right. It just hasn't happened.
Well, one of the problems that I think that is taking place is we are seeing inefficiency, and then inefficiency being expanded. Government itself has expanded under in the last, say, 12 years. And I don't want to say all these people are incompetent, because obviously not. A lot of those people are very smart. They do their job very, very well. But the bureaucracy of the departments have just ballooned to a point where it's out of control. And we're talking every department and every nature of every intangible into those departments. And it's to the point where the Pentagon has lost billions. The Federal Reserve, $9 trillion is unaccounted for. These are why we have the problems we do. We're talking about gas prices and we're talking about the unemployment. And it is when the people themselves, who are ultimately the supervisors, the peers, the voters, and the taxpayers, and they become complacency and rely on anyone else but themselves to accomplish the missions. The old saying, you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. Well, when we rely on anyone else, then these are the problems that happen. And I don't think we should be penalizing companies for making profits, because we're not even penalizing the government for doing the exact opposite. So as long as we're going to pay these prices, why wouldn't they? And if I'm not mistaken, right around 2007 or 8, I don't remember, but it was like at 425, and people just wham, stopped. And it was the summer. They were just no, and it dropped and dropped and dropped.
Well, you know what, while we're on that subject, you know, back in 1998, way, way back then, I recall living in Chicago. No, visiting Chicago after being stationed in South Florida for a while. I visited Chicago, and gas was a full 98 cents. And in some locations, it was a whole dollar. And I was all like, what? And me, like so many others who were on the south side of Chicago at the time, we crossed into Indiana, because it was not so far of a ride. We crossed into Indiana to buy our gas, because over in Indiana it was 97 cents a gallon.
Imagine that.
Yeah, this is 1998, and but with the Clinton administration came Al Gore's plan to clean up our gas situation, because of he was just getting into that whole global warming thing, and so he had this plan and put a policy into effect where the gasoline needed to be cleaned up so that there wouldn't be so much emissions going out into the air. Well, the oil companies told Clinton and Gore that, well, hey, this is going to be expensive, and we're going to have to pass that cost down if you demand that we do this. And the Clinton administration, along with Al Gore, said, hey, we don't care what you got to do. I'm paraphrasing, but we want this gas produced in a way that it lowers the emissions. And so the oil companies followed the edict, the standards that were set forth, and of course gas prices necessarily skyrocketed, and we wound up paying close to $2 a gallon, which was outrageous. You know, $2, $2.25 by 2001. And it was all because the government decided that the gas wasn't clean enough for their taste. Al Gore decided that the government, that the oil companies were not producing clean enough fuel. And that's how this whole ball started to roll. Now, every state has its own standards for how gas is being produced. And that accounts for the difference in the price of gas from state to state. The fact that the standards for one state are not necessarily the same standards for another state. For example, New York's gas is 5 cents, 5 to 6 cents more than if you bought your gas in New Jersey. Illinois' standards are higher than Indiana's, so you could necessarily cross into Indiana and get gas for a lesser price. We see it happening all the time, but this is how it started. And the government has taken the opportunity to get involved in how private companies do their business and regulate, and you see what happens. The price goes up every single time.
Certainly is. It's just over and over and over. One thing I liked about Ronald Reagan, I watched a lot of his tapes. And in high school, I spent a lot of time in detention halls. Surprise, surprise. But I used to eventually, instead of detention hall, I went to this historical room where I would watch these VHS tapes. They're these older tapes that you used to pop in. But anyway, they're like audio cassettes, but they were with video. And I used to watch the Ronald Reagan Library. We had a teacher who would record that, and I'd watch it over and over. And I remember Bob Hope on one of the campaign trails in 84 making the statement about Ronald Reagan. He says, "Isn't it nice to know that the hand in your pocket is your own?"
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
So very true. And Ronald Reagan made the comment that politicians spend money like drunken sailors. But that was unfair to drunken sailors because they spend their own money.
No
and
doubt.
I thought that was really funny, too.
That is great. Hey, listen, we're going to close out the show right now. I want to thank everybody for listening. And, Mike, I will see you on a GDT show tonight. Will you be there?
11:30. Will I be there?
Yeah.
Sure,
is it 11:30 or 10?
11:30. 11:30 Eastern Standard.
Hey, everybody. I have such a hard time
He's
doing that.
He's been in the chat room. He just left.
Yep. GGT has a show with Cool Mike coming on late tonight at 11:30. I'll be there tonight because I've got a Starbucks white chocolate mocha right here.
Here we purple. Go again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Doc.
I'll break it out into a sweat right now just because of the caffeine. And it's like 65 degrees in here. In this
All right.
room.
I'll see you tonight, Doc. Thank you.
All right. See you tonight. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Come back tomorrow. We'll have a great time. We'll get back into the situation where Obama is rooting for this great country to fail. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow. Check out GGT's show later on tonight. He is the man, and I tell you what, he has a great show. Good night, everybody. Once again, thank you so much for listening.
That this war on terror, as well as our presence in the Middle East, is necessary and inevitable. To those who can't understand that, they need to spend more time on the History Channel and less time in the goddamn chat rooms. In this time of nuclear weaponry, we cannot afford to wait for the fight to come to us. You need to understand that. This political correctness stuff's a bunch of crap. This generation is so goddamn spoiled and lazy, they wouldn't know a real threat to their freedom until it interrupted the power source to their Xbox and killed 500,000 people. The complacency of fools will destroy them. That's written in the Bible. Thank God. I really wonder where we'd be today if some of our current members of Congress were residing during World War II. I think we'd all be speaking German right now, and the world would have a serious shortage of Jews. These people like Harry Reid, that son of a bitch is like a man in combat who won't provide you the cover fire you asked for, so you end up getting your goddamn head blown off. People like him don't know anything more about the process of defending modern freedom than they do about fornicating. Now, all this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to pull out of Iraq, is a lot of horse dung. Americans, traditionally, will protect their freedom. All real Americans love a good fight. When you were kids, you all admired the champion football player, the fastest gamer, greatest superhero, the toughest boxer. Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser. Americans play to win all the time. I don't give a hoot in hell if you're a Christian, Muslim, Jew, or a Buddhist. If you intend to take up arms to harm America or Americans, you will lose. Now we have the best equipment, facilities, the most technologically advanced weaponry in the world. And you can be thankful of that. Without it, there'd be a hell of a lot more dead. Now I say to the Iraqi citizens that if you know of people planning insurgency, stop them. If you see or hear about someone planning a roadside bomb, stop them. Shoot those bastards in the guts. Report their activities. That is the only way to build a truly great nation. The people must get involved and take it back, just as Americans did against the British in the 1700s. Being free is part of every religion, but a lack of freedom and misguided education can create enormous setbacks. In 1939, when the British ally Poland was attacked and occupied by Germany, do you know that that small island of Britain had the balls and fortitude to declare war on those Nazi bastards? Well, we did nothing. We didn't want to get involved, they said. How dare we not learn from such things? This is not a goddamn video game. This is a modern fight for freedom and security of this nation and the world. Now, the current leader in Iran has made it very clear that he wants to destroy America and threatens a second Holocaust against the Jews. And this leader is attaining nuclear technology right under our noses. The difference between him and Hitler is that Hitler built up his war machine in secrecy. How stupid and ignorant should we be? If Hitler would have had nuclear weapons, he'd have used them. If Japan would have had them, they'd have used them. You had all better wake up. If it were up to me, we'd already be in Iran, and their leader would be one dead son of a bitch. After World War II, there was a plaque laid in Germany which reads, "Never again, fascism." How dare you forget and allow it again? You all know the old saying, history repeats itself. Well, here we are. Now, there's another thing I want you to remember. I don't want to get any more messages saying that we need to pull out of Iraq. We're not pulling out of anything. Let the enemy do that. We are advancing constantly, and we're not interested in pulling out of anything except a parking lot. Now, there's one thing that you men and women will be able to say when you get back home, and you may thank God for it. 20 years from now, when you're sitting around your family with your grandson on your knee, and he asks you, what did you do in the Great War on Terror? You won't have to say, well, I listened to far-left bullshit, sat on my ass, and was more concerned with American Idol than I was about American security and freedom. All right, now you sons of bitches and women, you know how I feel. Go on. I will be proud to lead you wonderful people into battle anytime. That's all.